45 metres back. Bernard Foley's
got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Join with me this week, as ever, is Lockie. Lockie, how are you this week, mate?
Good, mate. Yes, I'm still around, hanging out like a bad smell. Great to see you again. I heard that you had some success with your subbies this weekend, Mitch. How did you boys get on at Hornsby?
Yeah, Hornsby, fourth division, second grade team, got up against Canterbury, which was awesome to see. A bit of a clean sweep for the club. So both our second grade, first grade, and our women's team got up. So very big weekend for the club, which was awesome to see, and some good results on the field as well as off the field. But Lockie, a little bit of a different experience for you this weekend. For the first time, making your official Stan Sport debut and getting to commentate one of the Hospital Cup games over the weekend in Brisbane. How'd that go, and sort of how'd that even come about?
Oh, you just got to ask for these sort of things. If you don't ask, it won't happen. So maybe somewhat inadvisedly, I put my hand up a few weeks back and ended up calling East v West up in Hospital Cup land, which was heaps of fun. I was woefully unprepared and have a greater newfound respect for those who do the calls week in, week out. But I had a blast. It was heaps of fun. And if they asked me back, I'd love to give it another crack.
Yeah, well, there's many more games of rugby to be played in Australia over the coming months. So hopefully we can hear you on our TV screens again. If you haven't seen it, didn't catch that game, do tune in. Lockie has a great voice for commentating. And that little intro you did at the start of the game with the very New Zealand-esque with all of the, like, the Fijian and the Tongan and the different sort of greetings. Very impressed with that. Came roll off the tongue perfectly.
lots of practice and lots of sweaty pits in the few minutes leading up to it, I reckon. But no, it was honestly, it was a blast. And I'd encourage anyone to put your hand up and give it a go, because it's amazing. And what goes on behind the scenes at the studios for Stan is really impressive. So a big thanks to the director Ed, who helped me out a lot and made sure I didn't fall over on day one. And yeah, like I said, would love to give it another crack in future.
Fantastic. So what we've got coming up this week on the podcast, we'll first get into our tips in just a second and see how that top of the ladder is looking. We've had some news come out last week around the Waratahs and Darren Coleman, so we'll dive into that, give our thoughts on that news that's come out and kind of the future of what 2025 looks like for the Waratahs at the moment. We'll then dive into the Wallaroos game against the Black Ferns over the weekend. Not a great result, but we'll try and focus on the positives where we can there. Then we'll dive into Super Rugby Pacific Round 14, go through a wrap-up of that round, focus on the Aussie games, and then look forward to the last round of the season, round 15, and hopefully do that within an hour. So let's try and keep this punchy for our fans out there. Well done to Wilson's Warriors, or Nick W, who's still in top spot on 62 points. Now, he did only get 4 points this weekend, so it is getting close. We've got Bob Dean V, or Dean Bob, not quite sure which of the names there is your actual team, in second place, currently on 61 points. So that gap is wide and is shortening there. So well done to Dean, I'm going to say. I'm getting close there to Nick up the top. We got in third place, Big Boys or Pearson C on 60 points. So another great round of tipping there. And the top is getting very, very tight with only a few games left in the season. Let's see if Nick can hold on and take out the championship for 2024. That probably leads us into our first point of the podcast. Which is the Waratahs announced last Monday at time of recording that Darren Coleman's contract for 2024 will not be renewed. He effectively at that point in time had 2 games left coaching the Waratahs, and he would not foreseeably be in or employed by the Waratahs in the future post this season. Lockie, quick few thoughts from you.
Yeah, just to recap, I guess we've had a week now to marinate on this news. It did break last Monday, so we're certainly treading over some old ground, but maybe that'll take a little bit of the emotion out of it, because it was quite raw, that Tuesday press conference last week, Mitch, where Darren Coleman fronted media alongside a Paul Dawn to share the news that he won't be renewed for 2025. And after three seasons of Darren Coleman, we've seen the Tars rise and fall. So it's been an interesting period, and I'm keen to get your thoughts as a Waratahs fan, and now with a week to process this news. What did you make of it when that broke with two rounds still to play, given the Waratahs had earlier stated that a decision would be made by March, and then that a decision would be made after the season? It feels like they're sort of settled somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, there's a fair bit to unpack with this one. I think, first of all, not surprised around the decision that the board went with to not renew Darren's contract. As good as a coach as he was in that first year, we just haven't seen that form replicated. Now, I'll speak a little bit more around that decision maybe a little bit later in this conversation, but that result against the Western Force last week was the nail in the coffin. Like, they did not fire a shot in that game. And whether that is Darren Coleman's fault completely to where, he's a scapegoat at the moment. And so, yeah, not surprised that the decision was made to not renew his contract, but I think there were decisions that could have been made previously by the organization that would have seen Darren better supported in his last season.
We've got to mention the injuries in this as well. Form has left the Waratahs, I think is the kind way to put it this season. They recently went down to Moana, 27 points to 12, which we'll touch on in a little while down the track in this pod. But injuries have plagued Daceyville. There were 11 players sidelined at the start of the season, including players like Ned Hattingen, Lockie Swinton and Dave Parecki, who was ruled out for the season from the get-go. At this point, with one round remaining, there are at least 14 season-ending injuries, seven of which have occurred to the regular front rowers. How much of an impact does that have on the squad, and how much should that be taken into consideration when the Tars did review Darren Coleman's contract and found that it was wanting and that he would not be renewed?
Yeah, it definitely plays a part in the preparation for the game week in, week out that the Waratahs and the team are able to pick when they don't have their best choice players and a lot of their Wallabies contingent that are out injured. We've seen the results in the past few weeks reflect those injuries and the ability not to pick their starting front row. And you can't play a game of rugby at this level without an experienced front row. We have seen that week in, week out. They're just not competitive when they're getting penalised every single scrum. As the head coach, Darren Coleman has to take responsibility for the way the program's run, and ultimately he has to fall on his sword there. That's what he's done. And there will be a review into it. It's not necessarily his fault completely that these injuries occur. Whether there is something that's not 100% right in the setup of the program and the S&C team, maybe that might be discovered through this review. And then as those injuries kind of went on through the season, the Waratahs' hands were forced in that the workloads of players like Harry Johnson-Holmes and Thompson Stringer were increased, because all of a sudden they're players who might start a game but expected to only play 40, 50 minutes. And they're expected now, once those injuries started to occur, to play 80 minutes week in, week out, and they have to train as those starting players all week. Their workload increases, and that's when their bodies get put under the pump and these injuries do occur. So it's a vicious cycle, unfortunately, for the Waratahs, in that as injuries started to occur through the team, the workloads of the remaining players increased to the point where they also got injured, and there was no alternative.
So with that news now locked in, DC has one final game, a home game against the Queensland Reds coming up to finish his tenure leading the Sky Blue. We won't give this too much airtime because there's a lot of water to go under the bridge, Mitch, but already there are rumours, sceptics, people circulating a bit of mail about who the next Waratahs coach might be. We're hearing names like Nathan Gray, Michael Checker, potentially someone like Stephen Hoyles has been floated. In your opinion, as a Tars fan and a rugby man, do you have someone in mind that could jump in and fill DC's spot? And more importantly, what kind of coach should there be to take on a project like the Waratahs at the moment?
Look, I think there's two different answers for this question for mine. And The first answer is probably the most unrealistic one, and that is who, if I could pick anyone to come in as a coach at the moment and take the Waratahs through the next 4 or 5 years of Super Rugby Pacific, it would be Simon Raolui. We've seen that he was already working under Michael Checker in 2018-19 at the Wallabies level. He then went across to Fiji Rugby, worked with the Drua, went into, took over as head of Fiji Rugby, then stepped in 2023 last year and took them to a successful, their most successful World Cup, the Fijians, with very little prep. So just the rugby IP, the fact that he is an Australian, Australian-raised player, coach, administrator, shows that he knows our systems, he knows our players. He's been in the Wallaby setup. He would be fantastic to help rebuild this team. I think the other answer to the question would be around more realistic. And I think in terms of what RA wants and the money side of things, Nathan Gray is probably the person that gets the chockies at the moment, purely because he's already in, he's employed by Rugby Australia as the under-20s coach. He has previously coached the Waratahs. He's previously coached the Wallabies under Michael Checker. And he's a known sort of quantity, maybe not so much as a head coach in a Super Rugby level, but he has shown what he can do at the Super, the under 20s level. So that's probably the more realistic chance. If I could pick the third option, if that was like, if I was given the keys at Rugby Australia, what I would be doing is bringing in Nathan Gray as an assistant coach, get Michael Checker back for 2 years. Those two have played together, have coached together, sorry, I should say, at both Waratahs and Wallabies level, get Michael Checker in as the guy to come in and rejuvenate the system, get the roster looking good and get them competitive against the Lions in 2025. Hopefully maybe get a Super Rugby finals in 2026. He's done it before. And then he moves on to something else because you're not going to get Michael Checker to stick around for a long period of time at a Waratahs role. He wants to be back in the Wallabies. Maybe that happens. I don't know. And then Nathan Gray takes over, and there's a bit of a transition period there. That, I think, personally would be the best move forward for the organization. Whether we can afford that, whether Michael Checker will agree to that, that's another question entirely.
Well, it's a proper succession plan, and it's something that probably hasn't been followed up too seriously across Australian rugby over the past few decades, really. We haven't seen that progression consistently, at least at a coaching level, so... food for thought for those listening in from Moore Park, if you are.
Final comment just before we move on from DC. DC's a great bloke, and we've chatted with him numerous times over the last 3 years as he was the head coach. We, Ando and I, went out to Dacey Field early this year and sat down and spoke to him for about an hour. Really, really open, really willing to just chat anything and answer all of our questions. So no doubt that he is a fantastic rugby person, someone that we want in our game. I think the frustration from Waratahs fans is this season has not been good from a Waratahs perspective. And I don't personally blame Darren Coleman for that at all. I mean, I think the board needs to take a lot of ownership of the way that this season has run. It very much shouts 2020, that winless season where they sacked Rob Penny halfway through and the rest of the season was a shamble. Coming out in the first weeks of the competition and saying, you know, we want DC to prove to us that he's the coach post 2024, giving him 4 weeks to prove that, that's putting pressure on him straight away. And Darren Coleman came out in his press conference last week and did say that the board did everything they possibly could to try and give him the opportunity to prove that he was the guy to stick around by moving that benchmark. But that doesn't need to be made public, first of all. He should not have been put under that pressure in the first place. He's already, from the first game of the season, fighting for his job. Regardless of what happens off the field in terms of injuries and preparation, the pressure that he's on, thinking that I need to prove that I'm the guy to extend past 2024 from the first game or by those first 4 games and have that added pressure throughout the year, is just added pressure that a Super Rugby coach does not need. And I think we've seen that through this season, that as the results haven't come, as the injuries have started to pile up, as the board then starts to say things in the media around, oh, we'll wait, we'll review mid-season. We've done a review. We've given Darren feedback. We want to see how he bounces back. They kept changing that that goalpost of where that decision was going to be made. I would have just loved for the Waratahs to come out at the beginning of 2024 and say, like the Western Force did earlier this season, we've decided that Darren Coleman is the best candidate for us to coach the Waratahs long term. We've offered him a 2-year extension. We're not so worried about how 2024 looks, but we know that he's got the expertise, the players on side to see us through the next two seasons. Let's just finish off and not have those questions in the background that's milling around. And then I think we would have seen a completely different outcome to this season. We wouldn't have seen players like Will Harrison leave. We wouldn't see players like Ned Harrison leave. Ned Hannigan leave. We come to the end of 2024. We've got no coach. We've got next to no roster next year. We've got players who don't want to be here, who are asking for releases and getting told no. Like, this is the worst possible outcome, and the board have to take full responsibility for this. End of rant.
It's a great rant, and it's a really interesting comparison they draw between the Tars and the Force, who until probably 3 weeks ago were tracking on similar lines, you know, injuries aside on the Tars perspective. But, you know, we saw Cron, as you mentioned, backed from the get-go, and the way that the Force have built into the season looks to me and smacks to me of a team with belief and confidence, not just in each other, but in the coaching staff. So lots to unpack there, and I thought really well said from you regarding the Tars, Mitch. But steer us onwards, mate. What is next on the menu this evening?
Yeah, it doesn't get much better for what Australian rugby fans, unfortunately. We move now into the Wallaroos' performance against the Black Ferns for the first time in 2024, the end of Pacific Four the last game of the Pacific Four series for the Wallaroos. Final score in this one, 67-19 to the Black Ferns. Now, we spoke last week around what the Wallaroos needed to do in this game to, first of all, not finish last on the Pacific Four series, but also to qualify for World XV1. And they needed to win by a bonus point against the Black Ferns. The exact opposite happened here. Just a complete capitulation, unfortunately, from the girls in gold. Not a great outing from the Aussies here. Lockie, where did it go wrong?
Everywhere. Which is tough to say. But there weren't a lot of redeeming features. We can look to some individual running play from 10 from Bella McKenzie that sparked a couple of highlights, even though the one-handed ball put down still scares me terribly, as evidenced in that third try being called for review. That would have been a nightmare if that one had been pulled back. But I thought Bella had some nice touches. Mac Leonard continues to impress me in the engine room. Still stoic, still great at set piece, carries strongly, hits rucks hard. But I think aside from Mac, we lost the physicality count 14-1 across the park there. The Black Ferns, too much to lose from their perspective. Coming off the Canada loss, they weren't going to tolerate a loss to the old rivals from across the ditch, and they played like it. They played like they wanted it more, which is a stupid cliche, but from what we could see on the field, there was more desire to get to the ball. There was more desire to win the collision. And there was a ruthlessness that the Wallaroos girls did not possess. And that sucks to say, because I had really high hopes heading into this one with everything to play for WXV1. And ultimately, we got outclassed to the tune of almost 40 points.
If there's a bad way to start a test match, I think we saw it summed up perfectly this week. So the Black Ferns kick off. The Wallaroos receive the ball on the 22. Whether it was in or out, I think it was just out. So they shift it back. What they needed to do at that point is clear the line. Pretty evident. It's rugby 101. Clear your line. Don't play attacking or defensive footy in your 22. They then ran it twice, ended up turning it over, and the Black Ferns scored off it. So immediately heads go down from that point. It's just the basics and the way that you want to start a test match against the best team in the world didn't eventuate. And it's frustrating because as the game wore on, the Black Ferns just kept stepping up to another level. And it was the basics that were hurting the Wallaroos. It was just players falling off tackles left, right, and center. Yeah. There was one try midway through the second half where the Wallaroos kicked off. The Black Ferns received it. They passed it to the right once, and that player ran through six Wallaroos players who all fell off, just fell over, and they went under the posts untouched. It's just the basics that were not there, and that was what was most frustrating as an Australian rugby spectator.
It comes down to that physicality. And just to highlight that, the post-contact meters that the Black Ferns were able to generate isn't just a figment of us saying the Wallabies fell off tackles. The Black Ferns carried 158 times and they made almost 400 post-contact meters, as opposed to Australia's 160 post-contact meters. So they were going close to tripling us past the gain line. They were so effective at breaking the first tackle. Their first clean was really efficient, and I can't recall many carries where they didn't gain at least 2 or 3 metres in tight. Look out wider as well. There's no problems with Australia's attack, as we've seen, aside from the ball going down. But when it gets there, they're able to break the line. They broke it 10 times at North Harbour Stadium. But the Black Ferns out wide, 21 line breaks. 5 of those came in the tram tracks. The rest were straight up the guts and really powerful, strong lines from their tight forwards that we weren't able to handle. So I think it's a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror for the Wallabies as they now prepare for a WXV2 campaign. And while World Cup qualification still looks likely, given that's based on World Rugby rankings, it would be a huge boost for the Australian girls to play against some new opposition and get back to winning ways before the World Cup next year. So maybe it's a blessing in disguise that we have some different foes rather than rolling over to Canada and coming up against teams like the Red Roses in France.
That's right. And I mean, the positive for the Wallaroos is they get to travel to South Africa. And you listen to the men and the men's players talk around what a destination South Africa is for a rugby player. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the Wallaroos to get over there and compete in that tournament. So really, really excited for that opportunity for those players, looking at the positives where we can. In terms of selection, I think one thing was pretty evident from this game that Joe Yap's going to take notice of was Sam Wood at 9 and Lane Morgan. Now, Sam Wood is such a young player and has had a really good development in 2024 with the Western Force, and she's played minutes now for the Wallaroos. But I think that the impact that Lane Morgan brought when she came on in the second half just took the Wallaroos to a different level. Their attack started to click a lot more. So I think getting that selection, sort of rotating that moving forward, is probably the key for the Wallaroos. They looked so much better with ball in hand when they had Lane Morgan there at 9. I can understand why Joe Yap went with that decision. She probably wanted Lane to come on and to lift the tempo and to try and add spark late for the Wallaroos. But by that point, the way the game was going, it was too late, which is unfortunate for them. I guess the other point I wanted to finish on before we move on to the men's games from the weekend was something that's spoken a fair bit about Super Rugby Pacific and the Australian contingent, particularly post-COVID. There is a lot of people that have spoken online about the need to go back to a domestic competition, a Super Rugby AU, if you will, where we only play each other. We saw how successful that was from a broadcast perspective in 2020 and 2021 when we didn't have that crossover. Now, I think this is a great case study, the Wallaroos currently. The Wallaroos have come off a domestic-only competition in Super W in 2024, and as good as the Waratahs were, they went through that season undefeated. No team really came close. We are now seeing the effects that that preparation had on this side. They have not looked up to scratch in any of their test matches this year under Joe Yap. So I think this is a key case study for us to say, for those people that are still online talking about wanting to only play domestic Super Rugby Pacific to rival the AFL, rival the NRL, if we want the Wallabies to be as successful as possible, this is the reality. We can't just play Australian opposition and expect to come into test matches and be battle-hardened and ready to take on international oppositions. This is the letdown currently of the system that the Wallaroos and the women's development system is facing, that the Wallaroos are so far behind any international competition because they're not having that exposure at a domestic level. Any thoughts on that, Lockie?
You're just hitting nails on the head all day today. I don't think I need to add anything. It's pretty clear that the Tars season, while terrific, you know, if you're a Sky Blue fan, has come at the expense of genuine challenge. And we're absolutely reaping what we sow in that regard. I know we mentioned a few episodes earlier after the Super Rugby Olympics final, Black Ferns co-captain Ruhi Demart saying, we want to play the Australian teams. And I know that there's a desire from the Australian women to have the same competition. So the sooner we see Super Rugby Women's and Super Rugby Olympics do some form of crossover, whether there's a merger in the whole competition, whether it's played pre or post. We need to see that. It makes both teams stronger. You want to sharpen those knives and ultimately prepare in the best way possible for a competitive Laurie O'Riley series that feeds into these future internationals. So, yeah, nothing more to add from me, Matt. I think you've nailed that.
Fantastic. Let's move across now to the men's game. And we've got Super Rugby Pacific Round 4 played over the weekend. Now, some mixed results from an Aussie perspective. Most of the games this weekend, bar the Waratahs, were Aussie derbies. So one set of fans is going to be happy. And with the results, well, two sets of fans are going to be very happy. Two sets of fans are going to be very disappointed from the results of all the performances from their teams. So let's maybe focus on the Aussie games first, because we're an Aussie podcast. That's what people want to talk about and listen to. Brumbies Friday night hosting the Melbourne Rebels. 53-17 was the final score here. And if there's one word to sum up this Brumbies performance, dominant.
Yeah, I'd throw in ruthless as well, Mitch. The ability of the Brumbies to exploit the one-man advantage when Darby Lancaster was yellow carded 10 minutes before halftime, that changed the game completely. So they're up 13-3 at that point. Darby Lancaster gets sent to the naughty chair and they lay on three tries in the blink of an eye. It set up a 34-3 halftime lead. And from there, the Brumbies didn't really look troubled. Aside from a few problems at set piece that we're starting to see creep into their game, this is an ACT side that looks like they can go pretty deep into the tournament. What did you take out of this one?
Well, just another sort of building on that last point that you made, the Brumbies have now done enough to secure themselves a home quarterfinal, which is an incredible result for an Australian team in Super Rugby Pacific 2024. Wanted to highlight that early in the podcast in case people don't get to the end, when we'll talk a little bit around the finals and what's coming up. But if you're a New South Wales-based fan, if you're even a Melbourne-based fan, you should be getting to GIO in 2 weeks' time for that home quarterfinal. This Brumbies team is playing exceptional football and the crowd does not represent as successful as this team has been. As Australian rugby fans, we need to get behind them now. They are our best shot, maybe outside the Reds, and Lockie, you might have a difference of opinion here, but they are our best shot at getting a title currently in 2024. And that would be a great way. That would be such a boost going into a test series against Wales and going into a Bledisloe Cup under Joe Schmidt for the first time to get a Super Rugby title under our belts as well.
We've seen the boost that it gives us, right? The success in 2011, the success in 2014, even the interest generated by the AU results over COVID, it does give a huge boost. So come on, Brumbies fans, get out there, support your team in a home quarterfinal coming up, and we'll get to those permutations on who they might play a little later on, as Mitch mentioned. But we've got to quickly talk about some of the details in this game. Despite the fact that they ended up rolling out to a huge win, 53-17, scrum time. Really, really interesting to see the Brumbies being marched back on a semi-regular basis now. It dates back to the Drewer performance, who put the squeeze on them, the Crusaders, the week prior to this one. Also did a number on them at scrum time. And the Rebels, five scrum penalties they forced, all in the second half, all off the back of a performance from Taniela Tupou that around set piece I was impressed with. But maybe it's more a reflection of the inexperience, perhaps, up front, which seems weird given there's, you know, Slippers and Pollards and Alan Alatoas floating around. But what's going on at scrum time for the Brumbies?
Yeah, looking at the stats, the Brumbies won 86% of their scrums, but the Rebels won 100%. And it's been a while since we've seen a Brumbies side that's not winning upwards of 90% of their scrums at set piece. Now, their line out is still functioning really, really well. They got 100% of their line out throws and three line-out steals against the feed. But the troubles at set piece and scrum particularly is concerning, and it's a concerning theme across Australian rugby at the moment. We'll talk about the Tars later, but we've spoken in previous weeks around just the lack of competition that their front row is currently showing and how it has proven that you can't play a game of rugby if your set piece is going backwards and you're giving away penalties at every single scrum. So it's something that the Brumbies will need to try and fix up leading into the finals in a few weeks, because coming up against the Kiwi Packs, and we did see that in previous weeks, where they can hang with them in every facet of the game. They can get over them at line out. They can get over them out wide. They can get across and get more run meters. When it comes to set piece, they're getting pushed off their own ball. And that could ultimately come down to a decision at the end of a game with a scrum in the opposition 22. If you're 2 or 3 points behind, they could lose you a game.
Now, as non-ACT fans, we've naturally found a way to bag the Brumbies coming up with a huge win. So we've got to highlight some of the good sides as well. The counter-attack remains spectacular. Tom Wright is surely the hot favourite heading into a Wallaby 15 jersey. After his matchup with Andrew Callaway, saw Wright come out firmly on top. Scored another 2 tries. The first one was just brutal power to knock over Brad Wilkin en route to the try line. And then his second, off that classic Brumbies general play piece with a prop throwing the ball back inside to the ruck. Usually it's James Slipper, but Reece Van Neck that time sending Tom Wright away. He's in some serious form. And so too, Mitch, is Jerome Brown, who's sort of had to wait on the wings a little, wait in the wings for a flanker role with the emergence of Charlie Kale, the Luke Reimers of the world. But Jerome Brown in the 7 jersey, 12 carries, 3 tackle busts, a turnover, and 19 tackles to go with his try. He was the everywhere man for the Brumbies. So they're sport for choice in their back row and in their back line. Just a little concern there around the tight five. And before we move on, around their discipline. 16 penalties, 3 yellow cards. Like you mentioned up front with the scrums, can't afford that against the Kiwi teams come quarterfinals. Anything else to add on this one?
I just think that it's another credit to the Brumbies to talk about, and you mentioned him before, Jerome Brown is another player off that development pathway. Whereas New Zealanders seem to punch out, particularly the South Island, seem to punch out fly halves and outside backs like they're going out of fashion. The Brumbies are punching out back row stocks like nothing else. And to have just genuine on-ballers, left, right, and centre coming through that system, that they're even fighting themselves for minutes off the bench to try and actually get game time. You've got Hooper, you've got Brown. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on there. And Kale, another one. Like, you get a player like David Pocock, you think he's a once-in-a-generation type player. But no, that system continues to churn out on ballers like nothing else.
It is crazy. And before, we can't forget the Rebels because they did get pumped, but they had some strong performers. Angelo Smith worked really hard in the second row. I thought he was busy all afternoon. Glenn Vai, who continues to impress me on the left wing. And Mason Gordon and Filippo Dangurno had some great touches as well. So not all doom and gloom for the Rebels. We know now that they're locked into a finals place. The lowest they can finish is 8th. So we've got to say a quick congratulations to the Melbourne Rebels. They will make a maiden Super Rugby Pacific or Trans-Tasman, whatever the real iteration of it is, they will make a finals appearance in 2024 against all odds. So super proud of them, and we're hoping to see them go well.
I think if there's one key takeaway for Rebels fans from this game is that Carter Gordon is so pivotally important to your attack. And we've seen that this season, that he leads that attack like no one else in that back line. And when he went off last week with a HIA and didn't play this week, their attack struggled. And they did not look like the Rebels that started this season. Without him there directing play, getting those outside backs into position and putting them into holes, they just didn't look like they were able to compete with this Brumbies side.
Yeah, and that's five losses on the spin now for the Rebels. So they've got a chance to turn it around this coming weekend against the Drua, which we'll touch on in our previews. But Mitch, steer us along to our next game to cover.
Well, the next Australian game was the only non-Aussie derby of the weekend, with the Waratahs travelling over to Auckland to play Moana Pacifica. Now, this was not the men in white this week. Their day, 27-12 was the final score here. A very dominant performance by Moana Pacifica. And just if there's one... with the news that came out about Darren Coleman leaving, there was thoughts around would there be a bounce back, or you know, the post coach sacking blip. We did not see that this week. Pretty average performance from most Waratahs players across the board.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Disappointing from the Tars. I think, like you mentioned, we're all hoping for that you know, media-inspired bounce back, you know, against all odds, backs against the wall kind of stuff. And I thought they looked sharp early. You know, had that disallowed try within the first 5 minutes. I think Dylan Peach goes over and it's pulled back from earlier ruck knock-on. But, it went downhill pretty quickly. I thought Moana played well. It's not to, you know, try and skewer the Tars, despite the fact that they weren't terrific. They still tried their best. They had some great line breaks. Peach had another terrific first half, I thought. It was really elusive up the middle. But, you know, not having a scrum platform makes it so difficult. So there was no clean ball for the Tars. And then, you know, when you've got rookies like Kara and Tamo Folau coming out of nowhere and suddenly carving up, you know, in his first few Super Rugby games, I mean, great for the Moana to have an emerging talent like him, but it was a bridge too far for the Tars at the end of the day.
It's just, it's a disappointing way to finish a season that has been underwhelming for Waratahs fans in 2024. This team at the moment looks rudderless. They look attackless. And if there's one play that sums up their performance this game, it was in the 36th, 37th minute where Mark Nuanganituasi has the ball in hand. He looks up, sees space in behind, puts a clever chip kick through, and the only player that's running on to attack that kick is Jed Holloway, who, I mean, credit to Jed. In years gone past, he's been a big barnstorming second rower slash lock hybrid who will break tackles in close to the ruck. But he's not the guy that you want chasing a kick and chase. And he ends up missing the tackle. The player runs through. Dylan Peach is a player that comes in off the wing and makes the covering tackle. The question for me is, why is Jed Holloway the one chasing that ball and not Dylan Peach? Surely Peach has the pace and the resilience as a loose outside back to get onto that ball and potentially score. Just a bit of a shambles in attack.
Oh, it's the lack of continuity. I mean, it's been spoken about lots with the injuries, but when you don't have the same 15 or even a semblance of the same 23 rolling out each week, it can be tough. Disappointing, I think, to see the lack of points when there was so much talent in that Tars back line. You have an all-Wallaby or close to back three with Nuanganituasi and Parisi joining a sevens player in Peach. You know, Walton and Fichetti were still pretty solid. I thought Fichetti had some great runs in particular. Tane Edmed, though, not finding the right amount of space and maybe feeling as if he didn't have enough time with the pack going backwards. So, yeah, mate, not a lot to pull out of this one. I think it's, you know, lick your wounds and send DC off in the best way possible next weekend in Sydney against the Reds.
That's right. Now, speaking of the Reds, let's move on to the last Aussie game of the weekend, which was the Queensland Reds hosting the Western Force. 59-13 was the final score here to the home team, the Queensland Reds. And another hat trick for the junkyard dog, Tim Ryan. He's breaking history. He's breaking records left, right, and center, this bloke. If you were Suli Vunivalu, you would be very, very nervous with the form that Tim Ryan's currently in.
Oh, suffice to say that junkyard dog fever's taken over Brizzy. There was a stack of people in the crowd with JYD shirts on. Petitions going around to have a bronze of the junkyard dog next to John Eels. You know, there's plenty going on in the media up here. But it all seriously.
I did see that on Scrumbags today. Now, how did it end up that bronze statue was shirtless? What has that got to do with?
It's a great question. We're going to have to ask the horrifying beast that is AI. And I apologize to anyone who saw that monstrosity that I pulled together in the wee hours of Sunday morning. But all in good fun. Yeah, Timmy Ryan's got Brisbane Eddie out of the palm of his hand at the moment. It's all set up by great play from the Reds. You've got to say, it's not just him. He's being put in terrific positions where he can show his pace and his ability to hit good lines. But yeah, geez, it's nice to have a real cult hero back up around Ballymore. You know, it's been a little while, probably the last real cult hero, maybe someone like a Radiki Samo running around. So to see people actively rocking junkyard dog shirts at the Caxton and rolling around is a great thing for Queensland Rugby. But yeah, look,
what Queensland Rugby media team needs to do ASAP is get on that and start selling those shirts at the merch store at either Ballymore or Suncorp, because they would go like that. They would
hot liquid money. I'll have to hit up the great Jim Tucker, see what he can do. But yeah, 59 points to 13 in this one. An interesting sort of opening 20 minutes. Lots of penalties kicked, patient build-up from both sides, but 25-6 at halftime, and then a 6-1 rout after Oranges to finish up 9-try winners. It was pretty ruthless. We use the same term for the Brumbies, and you'd have to apply it here to this performance on Saturday night. Hat-trick to Tim Ryan. 2 tries to Fraser McWright, all the usual suspects involved, Matt Fazler, Josh Fluke, James O'Connor having some good touches late in the piece as well. So from the outside looking in, at least from a caller's perspective, the Reds looked like too oiled a machine for the Force to handle.
Now, from a Force perspective, there was a key quote that came out of the post-match presser from Simon Cron, head coach, and he said, I don't know what the actual question was, but it was something to do with travel. And he said, yeah, travel was a factor this week. Some of our boys stayed on that plane on the way over.
Ooh.
Just instigating or saying that, like, vicious. His team did not show up. Yeah.
Which is interesting because there were so many great matchups between former Reds players. You know, had Isaac Rodder, Harry Hooper coming back, Hamish Stewart matching up against Haitha Paisami. So the stage was set for me for a really physical, confrontational affair. I was particularly excited to see the matchup between Tim Ryan and Ronan Leahy, both of whom played in the under-20s last year. And Ronan Leahy is a really well-touted prospect who made his Force debut last night. But you know, he didn't really see much of the pill, and his opposite number scored a hat-trick. So it's a bit tough to get a read on what he does have to offer. What can we add about this one, really? You know, the Force still, their season's alive. The Reds can't finish higher than fifth, but you know, they don't look like they're going to pull any punches in the last two rounds. And the fact that they were able to look to their bench, the Queensland bench, so early and give minutes to the Kalani Thomases, the O'Connors, the Josh Nassers of the world, it's a pretty ominous sign and a positive sign if you're a Queensland fan as to what might transpire in 2 weeks in a quarterfinal against the Chiefs.
I think what is frustrating for Queenslanders, and Lockie, correct me if I'm wrong here as a resident Queensland fan on the podcast, but this is the performance we wanted or the Reds needed last week against the Drua. Yeah. And what ultimately happened was they went to Fiji. They rested some key players. Now, this was an element that I wanted to bring up in the podcast last week, but we just never got to it. But resting Matt Fazler last week, resting the likes of Tim Ryan, choosing Suli Vunivalu instead, and we know what happened there. We know the narrative that played out. That hurt their season. And in some ways, it could be the cruel blow that ends their season. We have seen how dominant the Reds are at home, how much that they value playing at Suncorp, that it is a fortress for them. And they turn up when they're playing there. The loss last week saw them, as you said, not able to get higher than fifth on the ladder, which means they can't get into a home quarter or a home semi. And that could have been the determining factor in getting to the final in Super Rugby Pacific in 2024 and potentially winning a title. So it's frustrating that Les Kiss has rested players and has dropped that game, and that this is the performance that we needed last week. We needed to go to the Fiji, get a bonus point win, and then see out the rest of this season strong in hopefully the top four or five on the table. Four is where they needed to finish. Yeah, they can do the best that they can now, but you would love to have a home quarter in a few weeks to really pack out Caxton Street, pack out Suncorp, and cheer those boys home.
Oh, for sure. But I think to put it down to losing to the Fijians in Suva does them a bit of a disservice and also papers over the cracks from five previous losses. I mean, all the Reds' losses this season have been by less than 10 points. So put that into perspective, they could easily be 13-0 at this point. I mean, they've done themselves a disservice in Fiji, sure, but you know, games like the Golden Point loss to the Hurricanes, an extra time loss to the Blues. You know, there's the two top teams, and the Reds gave it away in red time. So yeah, you know, I don't think you can point it specifically to Fiji. The Reds have had their opportunities to nail down a quarterfinal and have that opportunity earlier in the season. They haven't made it happen, so now they're really up against it. And, you know, say what you like about the Reds-Chiefs rivalry, going over to Hamilton is a far tougher task than if you hosted the Chiefs here at Suncorp. So I think the Reds have a really, really big fortnight ahead. And it's going to be interesting to see how they plan around their final round match against the Tars. You know, do you send a full-strength side down there? Do you blood a few of your younger players when you know you've got fifth locked down? Do you want to keep the continuity? There's lots of different permutations that we can look to. I'm saying permutations way too much in this podcast. I'm marking that. That's a black mark against my name.
It's getting very close to the end of the season, and that's where that word comes to thrive when we start to look at the matchups for the finals.
So just running
through some of the other results, so the Kiwi-based results over the weekend, Chiefs hosting the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes get the Chockies there 2017. We then had the Crusaders hosting the Auckland Blues 29-27 was the score in this one to the Crusaders. So they keep their finals hope alive. Mm. The Blues, as someone said last week, might be dropping the pill as we get closer to the finals. And then this afternoon, the Highlanders hosted the Fiji, drew a 39-3 there. So the Highlanders, unfortunately, from an Australian perspective, have secured themselves a top eight finish. Would have been fantastic to see the Drua get the win there and kick an Aussie Kiwi team out of that top eight, but not to be, which is unfortunate. So as things currently stand at this point of the competition, after all games are played, we have the Blues in first place on, where's the points here? 51 points, shared equal currently with the Hurricanes, also on 51 points, but the for and against is better for the Blues, so they are in first place. We have the Brumbies in third on 48 points, the Chiefs in fourth on 43 points, the Reds in fifth on 36 points. Now, to Lockie's point, he said the Reds, even if they lose against the Tars next week, cannot drop below fifth because in sixth place we have the Highlanders on 28 points. So there's an 9-point gap there-ish. Then we have the the Rebels in seventh on 26 points. We have the Drua currently in eighth on 21 points, closely followed by the Western Force in ninth on 19 points, with the Crusaders on equal points of 19 and 10th. For and against is better. The Force have beaten the Crusaders, so they are in 9th. In 11th, we have Moana Pacific on 18th points, and 12th is the Waratahs on 12 points. So that brings us to Super Rugby Pacific Round 15, which is the last regular round of the competition for 2024. Let's get into our previews or our tips for this one. First game of the round is the Crusaders hosting Moana Pacifica. This is played in Christchurch. How do you see this one going, Lockie?
I only see it going one way after the Crusaders knocked off the Blues, and that's a win to the Red and Black. They're desperate to keep their season alive. It's not in their hands, though, so they need to flog Moana and pray for the Rebels to get up over the Drua, and they need to pray for the Force to fall over in Perth. So I still think it's the Crusaders first and daylight second in this one. How about you?
Yeah, I think the Crusaders have shown in their performance this week against the Blues that they've woken up from that nap that was 2024 and they're ready to put that run into the finals. So I'd expect them to show up this week and push and do everything they possibly can to try and get a finals berth. So I expect a bonus point win there from the Crusaders. Yeah. Now, the next is the biggest game of the weekend for the podcast.
Woo!
It is the Waratahs get against the Reds. 7:35 kickoff on Friday night. Lockie, this is a pretty hard game to preview on Sunday night before any team has been announced. We just don't know currently what both Darren Coleman or Les Kiss are thinking in terms of team namings and preparation, and that has a massive bearing on what's going to happen in this game.
Yeah, it does. As we sort of touched on earlier, the Reds could easily send down an entirely new 23 to what we saw pace the Force over the past weekend, and the Waratahs can't afford that luxury, but they have so much to play for DC's final game, their final home game of the season. They owe it to themselves, their staff and their fans to produce a performance worthy of the Sky Blue jersey. So I have no idea how this can pan out. I'm hoping to get down there and be able to catch it with you live. We'll see if we can make it, but I've still got a tip with my heart for this. I reckon the Reds will want to finish their season on a high and carry that into quarterfinal time. So I'm going to say Reds by 8 points.
Yeah, if I was Les Kiss, I'd be selecting my strongest 15, potentially 23 for this game, just to finish the season off strong. Let's get a team that we want to play finals with and just give them as many minutes together as possible. Yes, there's travel involved. Yes, there's the potential to get injuries, but I just don't think you want to be doing what effectively happened in the bye previous in the season when you had a week off, players had weeks off, you had a disjumbled preparation coming back from that, and they didn't show up the next week. So I think the Reds will stick with a pretty strong side. Even if the Reds do, as you said, Lockie, and do rest players and do sort of put a different 23 together, even if the Reds picked three front rowers who have trained together more than four times this season at Reds HQ, at Ballymore, they'll be more competitive than the Waratahs front row. And so there's no reason why the Reds... I don't see any way that the Waratahs, unfortunately, can win this game. there's just, without a functioning forward pack, there's no way that you can go up against the likes of a pack that is as strong as the Queensland Reds at the moment. And we have seen, even outside of the scrum, the back line for the Waratahs is not firing. We're not getting the ball into Mark Noong and Idawasi's hands, or Dylan Peach, or our back three. So this would be a bonus point win to the Reds, I imagine. I would not be surprised, 15 to 20 points in their favour.
Yeah, and look, that's the only reason that the Reds can afford to send down a potentially a non-starting quarterfinal side is because of the Waratahs' depth, not because of the position they are on the ladder. It's purely a matter of personnel and who they're up against there. So interesting to see how that one goes. A podcast plate up for grabs again, hoping it stays in Brisbane. But moving on to the Saturday games, a huge day in the scheme of the finals, Mitch. It starts at midday Australian Eastern Standard Time with the Fijian Drua hosting the Rebels. The Drua are not yet locked in to a quarterfinal spot. They need a win to skip ahead of the Force, end the Force and the Crusaders' hopes. Meanwhile, the Rebels on the road haven't shown us a lot this year. They're already locked into a finals berth, and it's always tough to play in Fiji, so the odds are against them. How do you see it playing out?
The odds really are, and I think the Drua will show up for this game. They'll know what they need to do to win. That crowd in Suva is going to be going, it's going to be heaving for this one. They will get their boys home. I think it'll be tighter than last week. Having Carter Gordon back will just give them that little bit more continuity in the back line, a little bit more flow. But that ball will get into the back's hands a little bit easier than we saw against the Brumbies last week. So I expect a more settled performance from the Rebels. But I think this Drua team playing at home with the finals berth on the line, it's nightmare stuff really for any opposition in Super Rugby Pacific. So I'm expecting a big, strong, dominant performance from the Drua.
Do you see the Rebels, given that they've already locked into finals, do you see them potentially resting players and turning their attention to a quarterfinal rather than risking a Carter Gordon or a Taniela Tupou in what is, for them, essentially a game that does have no bearing on their finals placing?
I just don't know if they can warrant that with a final, like with a 7-day turnaround or a 6-day, depending on what final it is, with the travel coming back from Fiji. Like you want to go into a quarterfinal, particularly if you're one of the lower than four on the ladder. You want to go in with every possible combination possible, and so I think you want as many minutes together for that starting 23 that you can, that starting 15 or that 23. That you can get. So I would be selecting the side that's going to look most like that team that I'd put out against the first week of finals. But I could understand why coaches may be more hesitant to do that.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. And so too is the next game on the list. The Hurricanes pushing for a minor premiership. They're currently tied first with the Blues, and they'll host the Highlanders, who are already locked into a quarterfinals berth. They can finish as high as sixth or as low as seventh. What's your take on this one?
Oh, Hurricanes by 10 for this one. The Highlanders will do everything they can, but they've not been a team that's been able to disrupt that top four this season. And as much as they can push them for maybe 55 minutes, this Hurricanes team is just going from strength to strength at the moment. And without Adi Savea early in the season, we kind of wrote them off, but they have delivered and they have looked very, very good for the majority of 2024.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. And we could very well see a situation in which they play each other again in a quarterfinals. That's kind of how the ladder's looking back up at the Caketon. So interested to see how that plays out. Next up, surely, is the game of the round outside of the intra-podcast rivalry. It's the Blues hosting the Chiefs in the Battle of the Bombays. One plays four on the ladder. The Chiefs, well, they can't finish any higher than fourth. They're already locked into that position, but the Blues gunning for a minor premiership and a bounce back against their Crusaders loss. Massive, massive game of New Zealand rugby coming up.
Yeah, this could go either way. This is a flip of a coin game, and both teams would be up for it. We saw last week, or this week really, that the Blues lost that game by margins against the Crusaders. And, I mean, a penalty here or there in that card. Again, yes, they did score when Perifetta was off, but that allowed the Crusaders back into that game. The Chiefs, likewise, it's always tough. Any team in world rugby struggles when you go to Eden Park. It's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe the fact that the change room doesn't have showers or whatever. They just talk about it being a horrible place to play. and going to the Blues a week out from the Super Rugby quarterfinals when there's a first place spot on the line. Both teams are going to be up for it, but I think the Blues will be up just that little bit more. Yeah, I don't know. I actually don't know which way this will go. Who's reffing it? That might be the decision.
Oh, I'm not sure we've got yet.
I hope it's Ben O'Keefe. He's been incredible this season.
He's been so good. I actually love the access that he provides us on social media into referee insights and decisions and the human side. I think it's brilliant. But imagine if they rolled out Beauden Barrett, the Blues. We've seen those training photos of him now running around. I'm almost certain that it wouldn't happen, but just a quiet, you know, number 23, B. Barrett.
I mean, if you asked Simo in our fantasy team, he's fairly confident because he drafted Beauden Barrett this week and we are heading into finals next week. So he's confident.
They can pick him.
He's confident.
Can you imagine the fallout?
It can't happen.
That's a cheat code. That's like the Brumbies, you know, digging into Parliament and bringing back Pocock. That's crazy stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. Final game of the round is the Force hosting the Brumbies. Now, there is massive permutations for the Brumbies leading into this final round of the competition. So what could happen if either the Blues or the Hurricanes lose next week, regardless of bonus points, the Brumbies will finish top two with a win. If both the Blues and the Hurricanes lose, the Brumbies can finish first on the table and claim the minor premiership. Now, going to Perth is not an easy task. The travel alone is just massive. But this Force team has shown that they are beatable. The Reds did it this week. And they have the travel element of coming back from Queensland, which is difficult to do. If you're Stephen Larkham, you're not doing what you've done in 2023 and 2022 by resting any single player and potentially risking this. You would expect this to be the best Brumbies team of 2024, if not the last few seasons. Do you think the Brumbies can go to the Western Force and punish them by a massive score?
I don't think they can punish them by a massive score. I think the Force have so much to play for because they are still a chance. They obviously need results to go their way. They need Melbourne to do them a big solid in Fiji for them to have any chance and then put a number on the Brumbies. But I can't see a world in which the Brumbies don't have 12 Wallabies in their match day 23 and go out there with a view to tying up a minor premiership. I mean, they'll already know by that stage, the Hurricanes and the Blues will have played, so the Brumbies will know what they need to do or whether they've already missed out. But make no mistake, they will send over their top-tier players and they will be out to crush the Force. So a huge game for Australian rugby. And I'm so torn on it as well because I would love to see the Western Force make a maiden finals appearance. And in the same token, the Brumbies to finish top two, I mean, let alone first, would be a massive boost for our hopes of the Australian team taking the trophy. So I don't know how I can possibly support in this game, Mitch. I think I'm just going to have to be an impartial.
Just put your Wallabies jersey on and just cheer for everyone.
Yeah, Wallabies cap on, Wallabies jersey on, and just go hell for leather because it's going to be a great game, and I certainly expect it to be a great game. The Force will be stinging from that effort against the Reds at Suncourt. The Brumbies are humming, and the stage is set for a seriously great derby match.
We're looking at the finals and how things currently stand on the table, and yes, there is a game still to play. If the Brumbies do finish third, they currently will play the Highlanders at home in a quarterfinal. Now, if they can finish first, as things currently stand, they'd be playing the Drua or the Western Force or, unfortunately, the Crusaders. Now, out of all of those oppositions as a Brumbies fan, who would you most want to be playing in 2 weeks' time at GIO Stadium in your first quarterfinal of 2024?
In your first quarterfinal of 2024, you'd easily be playing a derby. You'd want to play the Rebels or the Force because you've sorted them out earlier in the season. If that's the way they finish on top, and you'd much rather have that derby matchup if you finish first. I think the worst case scenario for the Brumbies is if somehow the Crusaders get their way into eighth, come over, and just have all the pressure mounted against the Brumbies.
No, I'm calling it there. It's not happening. We're not even thinking about that.
Happen.
That's not.
It can't happen.
It's not.
It would be a total bloody disgrace if the Crusaders sneak in somehow. So bugger them all and go our Aussie teams this weekend. It's going to be a great great finish to what's been a terrific Super Rugby Pacific season. It's been such a joy, and I hope you found this too, Mitch, to be able to cover and analyze a season that has had so much hype and so much delivery as well. It's been terrific so far, and I hope it finishes its regular fixtures in the same night.
Oh, no doubt it will. This has been the best year of Super Rugby as much as I can remember. Maybe 2024 was pretty good as well. 2014, sorry. But that brings us to the end of the podcast. Now, as we have said previously, next Friday night, the Waratahs do play their final home season of the year. If you're a New South Wales or a Sydney-based fan, get out there. Support the Tars. If not for the Tars, do it for DC. Give him the final game at Allianz Stadium as head coach. Thank him for his services. But I'll be out there. Ando might be out there. Lockie, you're still a to be confirmed, but it would be awesome if you could get down there and support the Reds. Look out for us if you are there. Come up and say hi. Give us a high five or a thumbs up or a chat. We'd love to hear from you. And yeah, get into Lockie if he is there and tell him why the Reds aren't going to win this one. But thanks for getting this part of the podcast. We'll be back next week and we'll see you all then. Thanks, Lockie. Bye.
Bye.